This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The Iranian Foreign Ministry says Tehran will not allow its borders to be violated, that Iran will firmly confront any aggression or threat by America. Meanwhile, there are the continuing questions about U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to call off planned military strikes against Iran. Here is AP correspondent Sagar Meghani.
The president says the military was cocked and loaded to retaliate for Iran shooting down an American drone and asked for final approval about a half hour out, and tells NBC's Meet the Press they told him about 150. So he pulled the plug. It raises questions about why the president only learned about the potential deaths a few minutes ahead of time. The military would ordinarily provide that well before. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's pleas the strikes didn't happen, fearing the escalation could lead to war.
The strike of that amount of collateral damage would be very provocative.
Sagar Meghani at the Pentagon.
Leaving for Camp David a short time ago, President Trump said a new nuclear agreement with Tehran could fit a slogan, "Make Iran Great Again." And he voiced appreciation for Iran's admission it had decided not to attack a U.S. Navy plane, along with the unmanned drone it shot down. There are indications Iran is getting more involved in cyber attacks on the United States, AP's Ben Thomas reports.
Cybersecurity firms CrowdStrike and FireEye say hackers believed to be working for the Iranian government have launched a series of offensive cyber attacks in recent weeks, targeting U.S. government agencies and sectors of the U.S. economy, including oil and gas. Specifically, the firms say the hackers have sent waves of spear phishing emails, which mimic legitimate emails but contain malicious software. The National Security Agency would not discuss Iranian cyber actions specifically, but in a statement to the Associated Press, the agency says there have been serious issues with malicious Iranian cyber actions in the past. Ben Thomas, Washington.
More news at voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. With the crisis over Iran as the backdrop, the United States today has a new acting defense secretary who replaces another acting Pentagon chief. Here is AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan wraps up his last day on the job. Pentagon workers applauding the outgoing acting secretary on Friday evening. He withdrew his name from consideration as defense secretary last week. President Trump named Army Secretary Mark Esper to replace Shanahan and now says he will nominate Esper as the secretary. Esper served in the first Gulf War. He has experience as a national security advisor on Capitol Hill, as well as working as a lobbyist for defense contractor Raytheon. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Georgia and Russia are blaming each other for a series of overnight clashes that erupted in Tbilisi, the Georgian capital. This after a visiting Russian lawmaker, Sergei Gavrilov, addressed Georgia's parliament from the speaker's chair. Outraging protesters gathered outside the building, who breached police cordons and raided the chamber. Police tried to quell the melee, but as news of Gavrilov's action spread, thousands flooded surrounding streets to call for the speaker and interior minister's resignations and early parliamentary elections. A new report from the United Nations and other international organizations says more than 1.8 million people in the Central African Republic are facing an emergency food crisis. Combined with a civil war that began in 2013, the country finds itself in dire straits, especially now in the so-called lean season that lasts from May through August. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This is the period between harvests when people have depleted their food stocks and hunger is particularly acute. The World Food Program reports nearly 2 million people do not know where their next meal is coming from during this period. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoosel says, unfortunately, the hunger crisis will not be over when the lean season comes to an end.
Nearly 1.35 million people, almost 30% of the population analyzed, will be in severe acute food insecurity, including nearly 275,000 people in emergency during the harvest period, meaning between September and October.
Lisa Schlein filed that report for VOA from Geneva. For the first time since Mauritania's independence from France in 1960, people are voting in what could be the first peaceful transition of ruling authority for the West African nation. Mohamed Ould Abdel Aziz seized power in a 2008 coup. He's stepping down after serving the constitutional maximum of 2 5-year elected terms and is throwing support behind Mohamed Ould Ghazouani. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
That's what we're asking him. We're begging him to help him do his work. He has the right to hire and fire. Please relieve these people of their responsibility. Release them.
A major Nigerian opposition party calls on President Muhammadu Buhari to fire the army commander.
What has actually destabilized this country is the manner in which the elections were held and how the fake results were announced on 27th of May. That is what we would call destabilizing the country, not my own party president.
The Malawian main opposition party rejects accusations it plans to overthrow President Arthur Peter Mutharika's government.
Well, we are ready. We have finished the process of registration. We have 930,000 registered voters now. The campaign is underway and we've released our manifesto. We've promised a number of very basic deliverables to the people.
And political parties in Botswana step up their campaigns ahead of the upcoming October elections. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A major Nigerian opposition umbrella group, the Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, plans to officially petition President Muhammadu Buhari. They want him to fire the Army Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Tukur Buratai, and other security heads. The group says the security leaders have failed their core assignment to protect the life and property of citizens. The demand came after the Chief of Army Staff said the lack of commitment of troops is to blame for the setback in the fight against militant groups including Boko Haram. To learn more about the party's demand, I reach Ikenga Imo Ugo Chinyere, spokesman for the CUPP.
First of all, it's a shame that the president will wait for the opposition to make such a demand. As I speak to you now, 22 states in the country is down, have been taken over by activities of bandits and terrorist groups and all sorts of groups. The president has no solution. Now you say you have service chiefs, or whatever you call them, who are supposed to carry out the instructions of the commander-in-chief, which is to protect the lives of these citizens who are paying these taxes, keep the president is eating breakfast every morning. And now to this moment, they have not executed that ordinary tax. And then you see, keep them, is it for them to be consolidating and learning with human life? But now, ordinary sack your service chief, the ones you have right to hire and fire, who have displayed incompetence by being unable to protect lives and properties of citizens. The president has not done that. That's why we are asking him. We are begging him to help him do his work. He has the right to hire and fire. Please relieve these people of their responsibility. Relieve them.
Some are saying that Buratai was right to blame soldiers at the front lines for the recent setbacks in the war against Boko Haram and that he's been honest so that a critical focus should be taken a look at to ensure that these soldiers are motivated. You attribute it to corruption. Why?
It is a shame that the head of the troop will come publicly to be telling our citizens that his men does not have the courage to do the work. Whether motivation or no motivation, that is even scaring citizens. That is even making people to get more scared that they cannot even get protection and this will continue to work. He needs to step aside. Whatever formula he is using is not working. You saw the terrible warning by the US and the UK that have celebrated the position of we in the opposition that almost 23 states is done, have been taken over. If you have 23 states taken over that is on state, out of 33, the Republic is getting on stress. And the people that are saddled with this responsibility, they are the problem. They need to step aside. So when your formula is not working, you don't experiment with the lives of people because those people have a right to live. Then you step aside. Because
are you therefore saying,
is not to tie road.
Are you therefore saying that President Muhammadu Buhari, who was just re-elected, should step aside because his formula is not working?
We have said that during the electoral campaign. Know why I don't want to say that now? So that this opposition is asked what they couldn't get from the ballot that asked the for him to resign. I am not saying that now that there's a new mandate, he's barely 2-3 weeks old in office now. that those service chiefs who moved over with him, who have carried out his instructions, and those instructions did not work, he should start by removing them. When he removes them and this thing continues, maybe there is something wrong with him as the president. We can ask him to step aside. But for now, the people that need to step aside are the people who are carrying out these instructions, which has refused to work since the last 4 years. Unless they are saying that we should continue to have patience, why people are being killed in Maiduguri, in Boronu, in Zamfara, why they are learning how to do the work. No. And if you want people to surrender your own side so that they will suffer what other people are suffering. So let us not play politics with this. It is human life. These people have a right to live, and they have entrusted their life to the government. And the government must protect them, because that is the basic responsibility why they are in office.
Well, the government has said that Boko Haram was technically defeated and that they are putting pressure on remnants of terrorists to ensure that the lives of Nigerians are protected and their property as well. You sharply deny. Why?
People issue press statements. They just write anything they like on a piece of paper because it's not their children that is involved. What is technically degraded? These people that are killing people left, right, and center is technically degraded. How is it technically degraded? Because they're not throwing bomb in Abuja. Okay, what about the bandit that has grown? Have they also been technically defeated? These are criminals and bandits moving from those houses of Maiduguri to different parts of the state. And they are wrecking havoc left, right, and center. And you say you have technically... Who cares about technical degradation? Okay, so people should go and be celebrated. We are secured because they have been technically degraded. But they are still killing people. Who goes to bed to enjoy technical degradation or whatever they call it? I don't even know the meaning of that. You need to fix the problem. And if you cannot fix it, you step aside. You are being paid public funds. This is not a favor. Governance is not a favor. It's a service for which the people are taking over your responsibility. You are enjoying the AC in the villa. People are paying the tax. The chief of army staff goes on a long convoy of vehicles. It is the money we are paying as citizens that he's using to enjoy justice. So if you can't do the work that will protect us, you step aside.
Ikenga Imo Ugo Chinyere is the spokesman for the Nigerian opposition CUPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Sierra Leonean human rights groups and rape victims are demanding the resignation of Alpha Osman Timbo, the Minister for Basic and Secondary Education. The minister is alleged to have recently said some women are to blame for being raped due to the way they dress. For reaction to the minister's statement, I read Nasu Fofana, the deputy chairperson for the opposition Unity Party and gender advisor to former President Enes Bai Koroma.
I want to know, is the minister a victim of someone who has been provoked who has raped women? I couldn't see where it was coming from. And I'm going to push for that answer because, in my opinion, I believe he could not have been so vocal about this if he didn't have some personal experience on this issue. This government is trying very hard for the first time to really put the issue of rape on the national agenda, and the president had a declaration which, of course, has been revoked, you know, in lieu of the Sexual Offences Act. I am appalled that he would embarrass not only his government, but basically undermine the work and our experiences as survivors. So first, in that capacity as a survivor, I want him to do us a favor and really resign. Politically, I just think this is political suicide for him, and I think he should be fired.
As a survivor yourself, when you heard the minister make that statement, what was your reaction? How did you feel?
Firstly, when I heard it, I had to cross-check. I was numb. I was shocked. I almost felt like this wasn't happening. This wasn't happening because I don't expect the Minister of Basic Education to actually speak like this. He's also a lawyer. When it sunk in that he had actually said this, psychologically, I was numb. I felt really, really sad because I know what I've been hearing from young girls in my tour all over the country. And it actually made me start thinking, you know, is the government serious about this? And I really believe that the president is really serious about this. But for his Minister of Education to come out to do that, as a survivor, I felt sick. I am still feeling really, really, really angry about it. And on top of that, women started sending me messages, including this morning.
Some people are saying that his minister's statement undercuts the president's determination to fight this scourge in Sierra Leone. Do you think the president's message has been undercut by the statement of the education minister?
Absolutely. So on one hand, we have the head of state who is taking a very strong stance against this issue. And, you know, the organization, the Rainbow Initiative, have met the president so many times, and he has actually shown his personal commitment. So, of course, I'm in the opposition, but I am with my president 100% on this. And I believe him. I know that he really, really wants our voices to be heard. Well, on whose behalf is he talking? Is he talking on behalf of the government? So for me, I really feel like it is not only undercutting, it's undermining. It's almost basically telling us, don't believe what the president is saying or don't believe what the government is saying. And if the president doesn't do anything, then, you know, I have to also hold him, you know, partially accountable that somebody has undermined what he is telling us and we are behind him 100%, and his action will let us stand between 100%, or we take, you know, some of that and say, Mr. President, we blame you. We have to blame you. It's your government. Because if people can make reckless statements like this and you take no action, we have to then doubt your sincerity about this commitment that you've given us.
There is also a new Sexual Offences Act in Parliament. What are your views, and do you think it's going to pass?
Yes, yesterday I was in Parliament with a group of women led by the lawyers. We were there to engage the leader of government business in Parliament. We were also there to engage the head of the committee on legislative committee. Listening to them yesterday, we know that there are some gaps within the current document that is in front of Parliament. And for example, no consideration has not been taken about, you know, children who are between 14 and 17 who still fall under young people and, you know, children. So it's a little bit complicated. So we have these young ones who are actually also committing these crimes. But because of our laws under 14, of course, we can't do anything to them, so they walk away. And of course, if these children also are thinking like the way Minister Pino is thinking, then we have a problem. We're going back again on Monday. We'll be sitting around there to ensure that we get a bill that is useful, that is more stronger, and not just something that, you know, will go to court, which is what we have with most of our bills. And this is why we are engaging the Parliament to see that, you know, what we want in there is strengthened, that it is being led by, you know, lawyers.
Nasu Fofana is the Deputy Chairperson for the Opposition Unity Party and Gender Advisor to former President Enes Bai Koroma. She spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, rejects accusations it plans to overthrow President Arthur Peter Mutharika's administration. Delivering the State of the Nation address in Parliament, the president said he has evidence that the opposition party plans to recruit Al-Shabaab, a Somali militant group, to overthrow his government. His remarks came after the opposition lawmakers walked out of Parliament to protest the president's speech, saying he is illegitimate. For reaction to the president's accusations, I reached Maurice Muntali, spokesperson for the main opposition MCP.
No, it is only unfortunate that Arthur Peter Mutharika can say that, because in the first place, he is misinformed. And such words are not only unfounded, but they are very unfortunate, because those are the words that themselves can destabilize the country, not Malawi Congress Party. Having said that, what has actually destabilized this country is the manner in which the elections were held and how the fake results were announced on 27th of May. That is what we would call destabilizing the country, not Malawi Congress Party per se.
But Maurice, the president said he has evidence that your party is planning with Al-Shabaab militant group to destabilize the country and to forcefully overthrow his government. How do you react to that?
That is being very insensitive indeed. You cannot throw to the public such an allegation that involves other countries. And after all, he doesn't have any proof at all. This is one proof that somebody who not even know what is going around, but he chooses to incite violence, because that is a very, very strong allegation that he cannot even prove.
You said he doesn't have evidence. Are you throwing the challenge to the President of the Republic of Malawi to provide evidence that he has, that you are planning, or leaders of the party are planning, to overthrow his administration using Al-Shabaab militant group?
Let Arthur Peter Mutharika prove what he's saying. Otherwise, he's inciting violence himself. We challenge him. Let him come in the open and prove that. In fact, he has to convince even other countries that he has mentioned that he has that evidence. Otherwise, these are ways that incite violence.
The president said the MCP parliamentarians' decision to walk out of parliament is indeed a work of democracy. However, he accuses Lazarus Chakwera, the presidential candidate of the MCP, of being bloodthirsty, despite the fact that he also won election in parliament. So is he going to be in parliament after boycotting the president's speech?
No. By the way, the issue in court is about the Malawi party saying that Peter Mutharika did not win this election in the first place. And let this nation and the whole world know that we also have evidence that he did not win. So boycotting parliament is only one side language that we are saying no to his presidency and that he did not win. But any other thing around that, we'll have to wait until the court finalizes the issue. Otherwise, the message that has to go out there strongly is that Dr. Chakwera and the Malawi Congress Party would not want to recognize Peter Mutharika as president of this country.
So is this resistance, as you call it, the demonstrations, the protests across the country, going to continue because you said he did not win the election, and he is saying that that is part of the plan to destabilize the country?
No, what we are saying is because of him accepting that he won, he's the one who is causing this destabilization. And these demonstrations are going to continue as long as justice doesn't prevail, as long as justice is not seen.
How sustainable is this plan to continuously protest for the next 5 or so years that he's supposed to be in power?
It is our hope that when justice has been seen to prevail, he's not going to be present. And we're not talking of 5 years. We're talking of now, justice now. And justice means let the choice of the people on 21 May be known and be carried and be told to the people. And then the right winner be the president of this country. But sustainability, it is the people's heart. People will never, never accept somebody who did not win the election.
Are you not worried that your supporters could be in peril if they clash with the police and there's violence in some of your demonstrations and protests?
No, I thought the police are there to protect the people because demonstrations are enshrined in our constitution. They are a constitutional right, and there's no way the police would want to choose the violent path. Otherwise, let people demonstrate whatever they want to say. Let them say it, because that is the message that they want to communicate. So we are appealing to the Malawi Police Service that they should exercise restraint and make sure that the people are protected and everything else is protected. And in the end, let justice be seen to prevail.
Maurice Muntali is the spokesperson for the Malawian Main Opposition, MCP. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Political parties in Botswana have launched their respective campaigns for the upcoming October general election. The ruling Botswana Democratic Party, or BDP, is expected to be challenged by the main opposition coalition, Umbrella for Democratic Change, led by the Botswana National Front, or BNF party. But the ongoing feud between President Mokgweetsi Masisi and his predecessor, former President Seretse Khama Iyenkama, is dominating the campaigns. For more about the opposition party's readiness for the poll, I reach Duma Boko, leader of the main Botswana opposition party, the Botswana National Front, BNF.
Well, we are ready. We have finished the process of registration. We have 930,000 registered voters now. The campaign is underway, and we've released our manifesto. We've promised a number of very basic deliverables to the people. One, we want to raise the minimum wage, which is consistent with what the ruling party has maintained, which they called a low-wage economy. We want to raise the living wage.
We also want to raise the standard of social amenities that are provided, social safety nets for the elderly and the infirm. And we also want to improve the education and the health systems of the country. So these are messages that are resonating very well with our people.
Realistically, what are the chances of your party to challenge significantly the ruling party, looking at the dominance of the party or the BDP since independence?
Yes. If you look at the results of the last elections in 2014, the combined opposition vote was 54% of the total national vote. And the only reason the ruling party survived was that one of the significant players in opposition politics, the Botswana Congress Party, had not become part of the opposition coalition. And so there was vote splitting on the part of the opposition. If you add the total number of votes garnered by the opposition in the 2014 elections, the opposition should be in power by now. And so this was the first issue that we had to address post the 2014 elections. So we got the Botswana Congress Party, the party that had stayed out of the coalition. We got it within the coalition. And so we now have a truly united opposition, which in our view and on the facts as they appear now, will take power at the next elections. That's the first major contributing factor. The second is the ruling party itself has split with their effort. As soon as the current president took over, first thing he did was to try and use his predecessor as the scapegoat, as the excuse for every failing on the part of the ruling party. And so, resultantly, there's been a huge fallout between the current president and his immediate predecessor, which has resulted in that former president leaving the Botswana Democratic Party, which his father founded and who was the first president of the country. And so we have a situation where the ruling party has itself split. The implosion in the ruling party has hurt them very badly. And so a confluence of these two major factors point irresistibly in the direction of a win for us, the Umbrella for Democratic Change.
Does that mean that you think your chances are significantly improved because the former president, Ian Khama, said that he's going to vote for the opposition?
Yes. Anybody who is familiar with the politics of Botswana will appreciate that Ian Khama is a very influential player in our political setup. He's also a ruler, traditional leader, and has influence in a significant part of the country, which is the Central District. That Central District, in terms of the constituency layout of the country, produces 17 out of the 57 constituencies that are contested. And so his influence is far-reaching. But he also has influence in other parts of the country. And so any move by him away from the ruling party results in astronomical damage to the ruling party. And this is exactly what is happening. And so our chances have been more than significantly enhanced by this development.
So what's next for your party in anticipation of the election? Do you think the election will be free, fair, credible, and transparent?
We are aware that the ruling party will do any and everything. It is desperate, and we appreciate. This is by far the most challenging time for them. They've never been in a situation where the opposition is buoyant, where they have a massive implosion on their part, and they are sure to lose power. And so they'll become increasingly desperate as the election date draws near. But what will not avail them, any efforts on their part, will not change the course of history as it's playing out, because they have failed for 54 years. Everybody now wants change. People think the country deserves a totally new breed of leaders, and they are looking to ask the opposition. The Independent Electoral Commission, which is the body charged with overseeing elections, can only do so much. It is also a very weak and not well-resourced body. But what will save the election is the resilience of the opposition and the vigilance of the voters. And I believe very strongly that they are all yearning for change, and they will do everything in their power to ensure the integrity of their vote.
Duma Boko is the leader of the main Botswana opposition party, Botswana National Front, or BNF. He spoke with me from London.
And you're listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a new report finds nearly half of all people in the Central African Republic, or CAR, are suffering acute food shortages. The latest assessment by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, a joint effort by 8 UN and international non-governmental organizations, finds more than 1.8 million people in CAR are facing an emergency food crisis. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Civil war in the Central African Republic erupted in December 2013 and continues to take a heavy toll on its people. The country is in the midst of its so-called lean season, which goes from May to August. This is the period between harvests when people have depleted their food stocks and hunger is particularly acute. The World Food Program reports nearly 2 million people do not know where their next meal is coming from during this period. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoesel says, unfortunately, the hunger crisis will not be over when the lean season comes to an end.
Nearly 1.35 million people, almost 30% of the population analyzed, will be in severe acute food insecurity, including nearly 275,000 people in emergency during the harvest period, meaning between September and October.
The United Nations reports more than 500,000 refugees have fled to neighboring countries to escape the ravages of war. Nearly 700,000 people remain displaced within the CAR. The signing of a peace agreement in the capital Bangui in February gave rise to hopes the crisis in the country would soon be at an end. Security conditions remain volatile, however, and attacks are continuing with increased ferocity in several parts of the country where armed groups that did not sign on to the agreement are in control. Ongoing insecurity is hampering humanitarian operations and making it difficult, if not impossible, to provide food and other crucial aid to the civilians caught in the midst of this violence. The World Food Program assists about 600,000 people in the country every month. Verhoesel says WFP and its partners are trying to reach more people in urgent need of aid. He says internally displaced people and refugees are the most vulnerable. He says they are totally dependent upon international assistance to meet their food and nutritional needs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroonians are mourning 17 soldiers and 8 civilians killed by Boko Haram fighters on the border with Nigeria last week. But not everyone approves of the military's actions in the fight against Boko Haram or the separatist forces in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions. Some think the forces have maintained the country's territorial integrity. Others accuse the military of heinous crimes, including the killing of civilians and burning of homes. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Military music is played at an army headquarters in Yaoundé in memory of 17 soldiers and 8 civilians killed by Boko Haram in Darak, a locality on Cameroon's northern border, on June 10. Retired teacher Clement Zana is among the hundreds who have come to honor the fallen soldiers.
Leur sacrifice n'a pas été vain et nous les vivants, nous savons.
Zana says the sacrifices of the military are not in vain because Cameroon has remained united and none of its territory is under the terrorist control. The government of Cameroon celebrates its military for protecting state institutions and defending the country against Boko Haram and separatist forces in the north and southwest. But some Cameroonians say the troops commit atrocities. A family of four prepares meals in a room in Obili, neighborhood in the capital Yaoundé. 60-year-old Mary Yekong says they have been living here for 5 months since they fled from the northwestern village of Milouf. She says government soldiers attacked the village and torched at least 30 houses, including theirs.
The military man here, her mommy, was crying, said, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus."
She says they ran away, leaving behind their old and sick mother when the Cameroon military arrived in their neighborhood, shooting indiscriminately in the air. She says from where she was hiding, she saw two of the troops carry their mother out of the house before setting it ablaze. The government of Cameroon blames separatist fighters for the burnings in which 9 people were killed, but Yekong said she believes it was the military because they used armored cars, which separatist fighters lack. Rights groups have accused Cameroon's military of extrajudicial killings and burning down of homes in its campaign against separatists and Boko Haram insurgents. In one of its reports, Amnesty International said investigators gathered credible evidence that Cameroonian soldiers were pictured in a video carrying out the horrific extrajudicial executions of 2 women and 2 young children. The government insists the army is professional. However, Colonel Jean Legrand Vondo Akutu, director of Cameroon Military Justice, acknowledges there are some cases of abuse. He says although Cameroon's military has remained largely professional in the execution of its challenging task, there are, however, some cases of abuse which are being investigated by the military tribunal. He says people should know that there is the presumption of innocence until a suspect is found guilty by the tribunal. Akutu refused to give specific examples, but said many cases of abuse have been punished. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Two camps opened to host Somali refugees in 2011 have been closed and handed to the Kenyan government. The camps hosted those who fled the 2011 famine in Somalia. Kenya says the action is part of its effort to close Dadaab, the huge camp complex that has hosted refugees for nearly 3 decades. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, turned the Cambios and Ifo 2 camps over to Kenyan control on Friday. As for the refugees who live in the camps, some have gone back to Somalia and some have been resettled in 3 other camps, Hagadera, Dagahale and Ifo. More than 80,000 Somalis have been repatriated in the past 5 years, despite criticism from rights groups that say they are being forced to return. Kenya's Principal Secretary of Immigration, Gordon Kihalangwa, said the Dadaab camp presents security challenges to Kenya and has lost its status as a place of refuge.
And we still have Al-Shabaab on that end. And look at the proximity. They have almost made this camp look like it has lost the human character. It has lost the human character because then there are certain insecurity activities that are taking place here. And that's why the government is saying that our program, I think it is good that we continue with the voluntary repatriation. And at appropriate time, this camp will actually close.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, the Dadaab refugee complex hosts more than 200,000 refugees, the majority of them Somalis, who fled their country's conflict and recurring drought. Since announcing the plan to close the Dadaab camp in May 2016, the government of Kenya has been reluctant to register new refugees there. Maget Gaze of UNHCR in Dadaab called on Kenyan authorities to address the issue of unregistered arrivals in the camps.
We have 15,000 asylum seekers or undocumented people in the camp. And to me, as with my military background, this is a security issue. 15,000 unregistered people in a population of 211,000 in this border area, this should be addressed as quick as possible.
Al-Shabaab militants have been carrying out attacks against Kenyan security forces and civilians since 2011, the year Kenya sent troops to Somalia to fight the militant group. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Kiti mi na misi na tafauti na we. Waikiki mi na mimi sina shida na we.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You are hearing Afande by Bobby Wine and then Utanipenda by Diamond Platinum. He follows Ujowe with David Lutalo. Ladies Night follows with Eddie Yahweh. Mrs. Wright by Raheem the Wizard.
Na watoto wako wasome vizuri wapate future njema. Madamu wangu na madamu wako wazae vizuri wapate matibabu njema. Inze kutulugu nyoto ndi muganda wo. Bino byenkola biyamba kwena bantu bo. Afande sipigani nawe na kupigania. Sipigani nawe lakini na kupigania. Afande sirwana nawe be nanirira kwe. Tirwana niwe mukagwa nanirira iwe. Afande sipigani nawe na kupigania. Sipigani nawe lakini na kupigania. Afande sirwana nawe be nanirira kwe. Tirwana niwe mukagwa nanirira iwe. Afande patyalwe mtedi. Afande atyalwe mpi. Goya goya bala bela duini nini ni. Afande chana diye ni inubiru chana diye. Why you really want to keep your people down? Yote unafanya, una wakati wakulipa. Yote unapanda, diye utafuna. Banji babateo, ngakwe bolivo. Wewe wale sobizabu. Afande sipigani nawe na kupigania. Sipigani nawe lakini na kupigania. Afande sirwana nawe be nanirira kwe. Tirwana niwe mukagwa nanirira iwe. Afande napigania maisha yako kwa sababu unapata mchara chido. Kama masikini hatoki alika ni mama inji ya pole. Why? Wadoba kubira girona ena uli muntu. Imbele zitunyika na weze zikunyika. Osula bube, okona bube, na bantu bona bubali bube. Menyoge la Kongo, nime la kona yenga chichenju. Afande sipigani na we, na kupigania. Sipigani na we, lakini na kupigania. Afande sirwana na we, be, manirira kwe. Tirwana niwe, mukagwano anirira iwe. Afande sipigani na we, na kupigania. Sipigani na we, lakini na kupigania. Afande sirwana na we, be, manirira kwe. Tirwana niwe, mukagwano anirira iwe.
Senti sina nimerudi Tandale. Meshindwa kulipa bima, nimeuza madale. Radio nyimbo mezima, TV ndio hatare. Meneja umebaki jina, nitakia tatale. Ole shabiki zangu, waloni sifu kwa maneno matamu. Leo mati zangu, nimitusi tu kwa Instagramu. Kimwana statangu etina ya nifamu. Hata muna izi kimpigia ananifukia kama salamu. Una magazeti nyumbani kwa kukusa bali. Sunajuaga utasikia tafarani timoni kwa zari amemwagwa. Na vinyeni hivyo nyonge tabia ya kwa jibu sinaga. Kama naiona michambo ya matemu wa zamani nopitiaga. Na yosema ya ramana sababu kuna inejua kesho. Anepanga ni ravana ila mificha ni confidential. Ukisa yumba sana mumeo nisije kwa kiche kesho. Mana rafiki wa jana dio adui mkubwa kesho. kukatama Tadiriki ataja kwa kunipost Pindisho zimekwama Na nkipata si jasi ni mikosi Ocha zimezama Mwena ni mshuru baba Kama na mwana mwanangu Roo yangu Tifada mbote Anakwenda na mamangu Kwa chaka kikweto na kukuzwa toke Usilie sandrangu Mwani yangu Chikaze usichoke Wenda kesho zaume yangu Mpevuma tena mambo ya nyoke Hey, na magazeti nyumbani kwa kuku savari Tunajuaga Utasikia tafarani timondi kwa zari Amemwago yewe Na vinyeni hivyo nyonge tabia ya kwa jibu Sinaga Kama na yona michambre matemwa
Kweli hani nasikia ndani, huhuli ni choma Aya simakani warasusa na shindo atakulala
Tangu leo
Katunda kuleo, yakalanka nywe kongoli wano, sabo yitenga nzepao, katiche imanko sabo jeno, yana kugamba kusingao, kafuyo ya jaroli ngango, mazimano suzano mpeo, oh oh oh.
Oh, it's a milestone in my life. Ze wanji kwembate nawalonyi bwentonda bintoko nayo nolumkubye keliso netegetege simfamba mukama saba vumu sobole kutuka watu ndei mubulire ejisula ku moyo. You know every time I dream baby yeah gwe omulunye nga gwe mama yatunuze simbo yamo. Oh,
it's another time someone's in a corner way. Just give me the chance to dance with you. Luna luna bu kusabye lupe. I'm dancing with you tonight. And I deserve it, man, run away. Esa nyuri no mweni vivelele. Awateli mulala litwa ukanya nawe. Nabanga nawe emiaka bukate.
DJ Ericom, the mix.
La wanda wala la valo jinyo, na yunge mamo yise wukwavo. Zerwodi wetunuli lanti, ndaba malaika, nyavo. Ndusima yivati nyavo, wikula mene fune chitengo. Muli, manivo vulu njivo, ngabwe vunko la vino, nyavo.
Nata nata leko,
kambame. Kamwame, lelo kenku sanze nsonyi, kazi sive kukondo, nyabu, oh, oh, oh.
It's a lover's night, someone's in a corner way. Just give me the chance to dance with you. Luna luna bu, kusabe rumpe. I'm dancing with you tonight.
Come on, baby girl.
Senani sabi nema nganawe.
Yeah, uli joko.
Esa nyuri no mweni vivelele.
Come on, baby girl.
Awatali mulala litwa ukanya nawe.
Itali mulala.
Nabanga nawe emiaka mukate.
Mwana kwa mwezi obusinzo kwa ta. Mama, why don't you bow to Fundeta Yaka? Baby, please. Melanga, women, Melanga, no time. Yeah.
chene unya chiri chimugwe mama Olavi kange chimuli umesa Malaika kusinga chimu useye ya mbanga Gomu nukikalala You're beautiful, babe.
It's a lover's night. Someone's in a corner way. Just give me the chance to dance with you. Luna, luna, boom. Kusabe rompe. I'm dancing with you tonight.
Come on, baby girl.
Senani sabe de manga na we.
Yeah. Uli jofu
Esanyuli no mweni Nivelele Awateli mulala Litwa ukanya nawe
Uteli wa mulala
Navanga nawe Emiaka hukate
So beautiful
So beautiful Tonight So beautiful Tonight
So
It's so beautiful tonight.
Otamula bulungi mama.
So beautiful tonight.
Zinabelanga nawe.
So beautiful tonight.
Kusulisa mama mama.
So beautiful tonight.
So beautiful baby.
Right by Raheem the Wizard. That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the misfortune that comes into town does not wear a turban. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.